Are you ready to take your poker game to the next level? Be sure to visit ProfessionalPoker.com to get the best in poker books and videos. ProfessionalPoker.com features all the titles from 2+2 Publishing, as well as all the best reviewed books in the business. ProfessionalPoker.com carries the Expert Hold'em series of DVDs. These include Rolf Slot Boom, Winning Plays 4-DVD set on No Limit Hold'em, Ed Miller's Limit 4-DVD set, Byron Jacobs' Heads Up Hold'em, and Dave Fromm's Shorthanded Hold'em DVD sets. While browsing ProfessionalPoker.com, keep your eyes open for titles available as B-Stock. What are B-Stock? These are unread publisher's seconds or shipping ding store returns available at great savings. Become a better and more profitable player for less at ProfessionalPoker.com. It's time for Real Poker with your host, Cactus Jack. Real Poker is brought to you by Hold'emRadio.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Cactus Jack, and you're back this week with Real Poker on Hold'emRadio.com, and I am so psyched. I am so happy. I have some special guest in here. If you go to this issue of Card Player that here it is on Wednesday, and it just came out today, or the last couple of days anyway, it's the current issue of Card Player. Flip open to Tim Peters' book review, and you will find The Elements of Poker. By Tommy Angelo, and the show today is with Tommy Angelo. He is my special guest, and welcome to the show, Tommy.
Thank you.
I am so psyched.
Me too.
It's been a long time. We've been working on this for a while.
Yep.
Tommy's book has come out. All of you know about it, and we're just going to jump right into it. One of the first things that I want to ask you, Tommy, is about your background, where you come from, and how you came to write this book. And now I'll shut up and let you talk.
Well, okay. I wasn't born a poor black child like something like that.
Heard your first Montavani record, and that was it.
I dropped out of college to become a bridge player, and then that didn't pan out, so I wanted to do something really stable, so then I became a musician. And that was a little bit shaky, so I wanted to do something that I could really rely on, so I became a professional poker player. that was in 1990, and I was playing nothing but low-limit games back in Columbus, Ohio, and learned how to do everything wrong that could possibly be done wrong, and just through many years of trial and error and suffering, I managed to get to a point where I was able to play well enough, often enough to get some wind under my wings, and moved to California. Been playing professionally there since 1998, and I started writing articles right around then, and I've always wanted to be a writer, and so I started spending a lot of time writing. Of course, I wrote about poker. That was my whole life, the beginning of 2006, I was married by then, and my wife was in sales, and she put me on a quota for the year, 2006, and I ran as good as I'd ever run and hit my quota for the year in June, and my wife and I decided right then that this was the time that I should just, write the poker book that's been sort of churning and growing inside me my whole life, and I decided to not play poker or take on any new coaching clients for however long it took to get it done. And a year and a half later, the book was done.
Now, a lot of the book comes out of your coaching, right?
Yes, yes. I was coaching for about 3 years from 2004 is when I started. And I started with a curriculum, but then with each client, I would add on and, come up with different analogies and different ideas. So I just started collecting this vat of stuff to teach people. And when I decided to write the book, I just went through my curriculum and I just cherry-picked the parts that I thought were most applicable to the most people and decided I would just flesh those out.
And you started coaching in 2003, right?
March of 2004.
2004.
Yeah.
Okay. The poker boom, did it take you by surprise?
Well, yeah. Yeah, it did. I think it took everyone by surprise. I always thought that the poker community was huge, even before that. You know, we would all gather in Vegas twice a year. Everybody knew each other. Everybody knew every single writer. There were only like three or four people who were actually poker teachers. And I thought it was a pretty big community until, you know, the entire universe moved in.
Well, one thing that I find so fascinating is that people in the community and poker players and all the way up and down the line, they knew who Tommy Angelo was long before the book came out. But you're kind of a surprise to the rest of the world.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, my writing has, you know, because it's a little different, has had sort of an appeal to certain types of players and readers, but it's had a deep appeal. So the people that kind of liked my stuff liked it a lot, and so they would write about it. And but one of the reasons I think that you know, to some people it's like, where'd he come from, is mainly because I'm not a tournament player and I'm not on the tournament scene. So what happened when there was the big poker explosion is, you know, the top tournament players are the ones who sort of became the instant rock stars.
Right.
And because I just wasn't part of the poker, of the tournament scene, I was just not part of that wave.
But it is amazing the amount of respect that you have gotten out there before the book. And now, you know, it's just exploding. I mean, making the top 10 every report on Amazon, and it is absolutely a phenomenal hit.
It seems like it is. The feedback has been very strong, and I really couldn't be more pleased. And the feedback that pleases me the most is, you know, I get emails from people who they're touched by the parts of the book that I was really hoping would touch people in a special, deep down way that sort of goes even, you know, beyond poker.
Well, for me, it's like Shrek and, you know, layers of onions, because every time I read a section again and the third time, it's like I'm reading it again for the first time, because it just depends on whatever mood that I am in or whatever game that I played in last night or whatever is how it affects me and how I think about it. And it's there have been many times when I thought I understood it and then came back and said, oh, wait a minute, I didn't understand that. So it must be incredibly gratifying to be able to do something like that.
It is. It's gratifying, you know, when I look at it through my own self-centered way, but it's also, you know, it's kind of like, somebody who plays piano or you know, paints a piece of art. It's like, you know, they're just doing what they do, right? And it's going to touch some people. It's not going to affect other people. And I just basically try to, you know, be authentic and as honest as I can. And, you know, the fact that it turns out to helping people is, it's gratifying. I'm very pleased.
Now, most of us who know you as Tommy Angelo, the culmination. I mean, this is when you know Tommy and you read his book and you say, well, this is Tommy. Have you always been Tommy Angelo, or is this an all new and improved Tommy Angelo?
Well, I've always been, you know, kind of a goofball. So that's consistent, but I haven't always been nearly as relatively tiltless as I am now. That's for sure. You know, I think one of the reasons that I am, if I am an authority on tilt, it's only because I've been such a horrendously bad tilter most of my life.
Now, in what ways, going back to when you were in Columbus, when you first came out to California, you lived your program because you used to be a bad tilter.
Yeah, yeah. And, what I was like there's so many different ways to tilt, but when you're playing for a living, and I was never over bankrolled, so I was under constant stress all the time, you know, typically playing in games 20-40 limit, 40-80 limit, and no limit games in the range of, you know, 2-5 blinds. In the Bay Area, they've always had no limit games, and they have a big game there, 10-20, effectively 10-20 blinds. And, there were times when I felt just absolutely invincible and at peace and everything was right. And I was playing my A game for days on end. And then, of course, you know, the bottom would inevitably fall out either because of the cards or, you know, just bad health or whatever. And so every time I was in a bad state, I would like try to figure out, wow, what is the cause of this? You know, what is really at the core cause that makes me go from being, you know, kind of feeling invincible and everything wonderful to just feeling like shit and losing every day? And I knew it was more than the cards. So I sort of recognized the cycles and the patterns, and every time I went through a cycle, I would try to learn more and try to change myself and try to modify it, you know, a little bit. But it wasn't really like I wasn't doing it because, oh, I want to, you know, figure out this stuff. It was survival. You know, I mean, I knew that that tilt was going to be the undoing of me, you know, if I didn't figure out how to get over it somehow.
And that's that. And he did. And that's the culmination of the book. That's what the book is about. Talk about your writing a little bit and talk about the process of it, because I've had several writers on here, but we haven't talked about the writing. I'm a writer. I'm a failed writer, but I'm a writer nonetheless.
Well, I don't know about that. Anyone who writes is a writer. That's what writing means.
Yes, and that's, yeah, but anybody who writes is a writer, but unless somebody is out there reading it, you're a failed writer. So it's just the art of communication. We have talked about it quite a bit. You love the process of writing.
I do, and it is a process for me. It's like it's almost like building a building. You know, there's the foundation, and there's the middle, and then there's, you know, and then outsourcing all different pieces. And for me, you know, because I've written about 50 articles before I wrote the book, I've pretty much refined my process, and I've read books by writers about writing, and they each just sort of evolve their own way. And a big part of my process involves outside help, and it's a big part of what I do is you know, I get something up to say 80% ready, and that means I've already revised it 4 or 5 times, and then I turn it over to somebody else. For years, it was my buddy Alex, who really helped me with it, and then beginning of 2006, I have a woman named Anna Paradox, who started out as a client of mine. She did some volunteer editing one day at my website. She said, "Hey, I fixed a couple things," you know, and I was like, "Wow, great!" Because I love being edited. Well, it turns out she's a full-time editor, so she edited my next 5 or 6 articles, and we worked together, you know, like, I don't know, you know, Elton John and Birdie, or, you know, just like we're like a creative team together. And, you know, to whatever extent Elements of Poker is a quote-unquote good book, you know, Anna Paradox is largely responsible for that. And she's taught me so much about writing, not just editing, but about the writing process and about how to stay motivated and stay focused. And I would just like to put in a plug for Anna, for anybody out there who is a writer or wants to be better at writing or has trouble motivating yourself. Her website is annaparadox.com. Sounds just like that, annaparadox.com. She's written a book about writing called From Wishing to Writing, which is just what it sounds like, from wishing you could write to actually doing it. And she's full service. She does everything from crossing T's and dotting I's. But her biggest strength as a support is she doesn't try to get you to conform to her notion of what writing should be. She takes you, the artist, and nurtures your own natural skills and allows you to grow within your own voice and within yourself. And that's a big part of why Elements of Poker sounds like me, because I had outside help, but it wasn't constraining. It was like nourishing to the whole process.
What an interesting thing, because most writers, I know myself, when I was writing, the more collaborative the effort, the more my energy level fell. I used to be very, very bad about telling somebody the story, and then when I got around to writing it, I just didn't care because it felt like it already had been done. Uh-huh. And your writing seems to be much more of a collaborative, and you get a lot of feedback, and you work it in.
Yeah, and I don't mind taking the time. And I'm also, you know, I like test driving stuff and sending it around to 4 or 5 different people, because I want to find out if there's something, you know, wrong, or something that rubs somebody the wrong way, or, you know, just whatever. And I don't mind. I'm the same way when I'm recording music or whatever. I almost like revise to a fault. I'll go back and just keep polishing and polishing and polishing. You know, my wife is like, "When's this book going to be done? You know, when's it going to be done?" I'm like, "I'll done." And until it's done, it's not done. And I'll know when it's done. You know?
Well, as someone who has lived for about 5 months in Tommy World now, I realize that Einstein was right. Time is relative. Because within Tommy's world, it is most definitely relative.
Well, it's a luxury to have time.
Part of it also is you're such a perfectionist.
I am. Yeah, yes. And it takes time to satisfy my own bar, basically, you know.
And that's what makes our relationship kind of interesting, because I realize I'm a perfectionist. I'm never going to get it perfected, so I just don't give a shit. And I just kind of wing it that way because I know I'm never going to get it perfected.
Uh-huh.
And I have revised things to the point where I could no longer even stand to look at it. And it never was perfect, and it would drive me crazy. And that's a really bad thing to have to deal with, man.
I got to tell you something real quick. One time I was about a month or two away from finishing the book, and this is after I thought it was going to be done like a month or two sooner. I'm on my walk and I'm talking to Joe Tall, and he's like, "Is the book done yet?" And I said, "I think it's about a month away." And he said, "Do you have it memorized yet?" And I'm like, "Well, actually, yes."
And that's that. And if you know nothing else about Tommy Angelo, that's Tommy World in a nutshell right there. We'll be back, and on the other side, we'll be talking about real poker. This is Real Poker with Cactus Jack and my special guest, Tommy Angelo, on Hold'emRadio.com.
Are you ready to take your poker game to the next level? Be sure to visit ProfessionalPoker.com to get the best in poker books and videos. ProfessionalPoker.com features all the titles from 2+2 Publishing, as well as all the best-reviewed books in the business. ProfessionalPoker.com carries the expert Hold'em series of DVDs. These include Rolf Slot Boom, Winning Plays, 4-DVD set on No Limit Hold'em, Ed Miller's Limit, 4-DVD set, Byron Jacobs' Heads Up Hold'em, and Dave Fromm's Shorthanded Hold'em DVD sets. While browsing ProfessionalPoker.com, keep your eyes open for titles available as B-Stock. What are B-Stock? These are unread publisher's seconds or shipping ding store returns available at great savings. Become a better and more profitable player for less at ProfessionalPoker.com. It's time for Real Poker with your host, Cactus Jack. Real Poker is brought to you by Hold'emRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Cactus Jack and Real Poker on Hold'em Radio with my special guest, Tommy Angelo. And just a program note for you guys. Next week, we've got Jeff Haney coming in. He's the gambling columnist for the Las Vegas Sun. And then there's a good possibility that the week after that, I'm going to be at Foxwoods, and then I'm going to be on a cruise, and then I'll be back at Foxwoods, and then I'll be back here. And I may even go see this guy sometime in May up in the Bay Area. So we got a lot of things coming up, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And welcome back, Tommy, and let's talk some poker.
Okay.
Your book is primarily, there's a quote on 2+2 that I've quoted many, many, many times. It doesn't teach you how to play poker. It teaches you how to be a poker player. And this is something that it works for children of all ages, doesn't it?
It does. I just had an email the other day from a guy that said he didn't he got the book thinking, well, it's going to be way beyond him because he's a beginner. But he's like, wow, this is great beginning stuff, you know, to learn the things that are in there before he really even got sophisticated as a bettor. And then I get emails from people that say, well, I've been playing for 15 years. I thought I knew everything, and now this is, you know, opened my eyes to a different way of thinking about it. So it is really just about being a poker player, whether you're brand new at it or you've been playing forever.
Now, your book is first and foremost, I guess you can actually summarize the entire book, is play your A game, don't play your C game. And a lot of people out there think of tilt as being when they lose it and throw cards and scream and holler and throw, you know, fits. But tilt is a lot more than that, isn't it?
Well, I would like to revise what you said there. It isn't just play your A game, don't play your C game. I kind of think of it like, you know, people that read books and listen to radio shows and things, you know, the assumption is that they're trying to do better, okay? Mm-hmm. The traditional way we try to think of doing better at poker is to learn how to play better, which is the A game, right? So when we're reading a book or talking to our buddies or whatever, we're working on the A game. You know, if there's a shift in emphasis in my book, it isn't that you shouldn't work on your A game, but what I imply or suggest is that, let's say you have like 100 units of energy to apply toward improving your poker score. Instead of just channeling all of it into your A game, take half of it and work on your C game. So it's like work on your A game, at the same time work on your C game. By work on your C game, meaning try to reduce the amount of time it appears and reduce the how drastic it is when it does appear.
Why should I do that? Because I make, you know, the plays when I'm, you know.
Well, let me ask you. When you're on your C game, by C game I mean whatever your worst is. In other words, so I say, you know, it's like everybody has a C game. No matter how great you are, take however whatever your worst is, okay? And what do you think your hourly earn is in big bets an hour when you're at your absolute worst?
Absolute worst?
Yeah.
I don't think I make anything when I'm at my absolute
worst. So what,
worst.
Like, let's
I'm
say actually, minus
yeah, I'm probably losing. Yeah, I'm
minus
probably,
one big bet an hour?
If I'm lucky, I guess.
Okay, and you're when you're at your A game, you know, meaning you're playing your best, you're in your best game selection, best seat selection, doing everything right.
2.5 to 3 big bets.
Okay, so your C game is costing you 3 to 4 big bets an hour.
Yeah, if you look at it that way, yeah.
Right, so that's why you should work on your C game.
Okay, so, all right, I don't throw cards anymore. I tap on the aquarium a lot. I call fish, and you know, all this. That's not a good idea, is it?
No, I don't. I think it's a bad idea for two reasons. You know, the traditional reason to not do that, which I kind of object to, is people say, you know, you shouldn't, you know, make fun of bad players because they'll either get better or quit, right? And I wrote a little thing about this. It's like good advice, wrong reason. That's like saying you shouldn't smash your head in, you shouldn't hit yourself in the head with a hammer because you might break the hammer. That's a really good advice to not hit yourself in the hammer, but it's the wrong reason. I think the reason to not ridicule the bad players is because it's just a bad idea to ridicule any human being. And if you look at it that way, it takes all the guesswork out of it. You're just like, okay, I'm just not going to ridicule anyone. And he happens to be a bad player. So now you're covering two birds with one stone here. First of all, they're not going to go quit the game and get better because you're making fun of them. And you're generating, you know, goodwill or not generating ill will. So it's a double win.
Assuming that fish are human.
good point.
Second of all, I tend to play sometimes when I'm tired. And that, I guess, is C game as well, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, C game takes, you know, many forms. It can just be tired, lazy. You know, so if, you know, a huge part of what I call lopping off the C game is awareness of knowing that you're actually in your C game. And that's the biggest hurdle for a lot of us because we play a long session, we're tired, it's the end of the night, and we just kind of, it's like a temporary insanity takes hold where we're not really in control of ourselves. So in order to lop off the C game while it's happening, first of all, you have to be able to step outside yourself long enough to say, I'm in my C game. And it could be because you're emotionally traditionally tilted, or it could be because you're just tired. So then you have to do one of two things, either quit or bring yourself back up. And a big large part of my book is about, you know, like almost like hand-holding instructions about these are things you can do once you catch yourself in the C game to pull yourself back up into your A game.
Yeah, I get up and I take walks.
That's great.
I sit out for an orbit and go to the bathroom and have a drink and just kind of, you know, chill and cool down. And I've often said that if you play a lot, it's like a boxer sparring, and you get hit in the face so many times that it doesn't quite hurt so much anymore.
Uh-huh.
And so that helps as well in playing online. We've got a lot of, in fact, probably 75% of the people that listen to this show play online. Is the book going to help them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much so. And I mean, I'm not just saying that because I hope it will, but I mean, I've already had a lot of feedback where people have a lot of the ideas that have to do with taking the pain of poker and making it go away, that's applicable to any bad beat anywhere or any sort of annoying, you know, problem, whether you're playing online or not. But you know, the some of the advice in the book is so simple that it's like, well, it's like, you know, let's say you got somebody who smokes cigarettes and he knows smoking is unhealthy, and you go up to him and you say, hey, did you know smoking is unhealthy? You should stop. And he goes like, well, yeah, duh, I know. But I'm hooked. I'm addicted. So just telling people you shouldn't do that isn't going to be to get people to do it. So what I've tried to do is like come up with ideas that are so simple that anybody can do it. And they're so simple that nobody can say, that's beyond me. I can't do it. For example, sitting up straight. for any online poker player, I believe if he were to just put conscious effort into sitting up straight while he plays, and then as his body slouches, catch himself and sit up straight again, that that act and no other act would improve his score, possibly significantly.
And so I'm sitting here at this moment, folks, thinking I'm looking like a question mark to Tommy's exclamation point. So suddenly I start sitting up a little bit.
Seeing your voice got better.
Yeah. Well, that's a reach, but it's worth a shot. There are so many moments in the book where you say, duh, why didn't I think of that before? It's that was the cool part to me. The very, very simple stuff that you said, oh, I knew that. No, I didn't. And that's very, very cool. Got to be a lot of stuff in there. Now, one of the criticisms, and there have been very, very few criticisms, but one of the things, questions, not criticism, but questions is the book is mostly for limit players. It's not.
No, I mean, the outline of the book is the first section is called
so much for memorizing the book,
yeah,
folks.
The first section is called Universal Elements, and the last section is called Performance Elements. Those apply to everyone all the time, right? And then there's a section called Hold'em for all Hold'em players, whether it's limit or no limit. And then there's a section for limit and no limit. So the only part of the book that is specifically about limit hold'em is the 1 5-page or 6-page section called Limit Hold'em.
And for those of you out there who really want to cut your C game, stop playing No Limit, okay? Come back over, start playing Limit, learn how to play poker, okay? You know, enough with this all-in-on-the-flop stuff. If you really want to lop your C game off, stop playing No Limit and stop playing tournaments. Anyway, you guys know I'm a limit player. You know,
so far.
We need to get those limits. So far. Okay.
Maybe you'll go over to the dark side.
Yes, I really want to push it all in free flop. Yeah, it's, no way. Nope. Yes, well, maybe. Okay. When the World Series of Poker comes around, then we'll see. We'll see, because it's so funny, because playing over in the Commerce and seeing all those people playing limit over there, and then coming back over here to Vegas and seeing virtually nobody play limit. It's frustrating.
Yeah, it's definitely, the scene has changed in Vegas, you know, dramatically. The amount of limit hold'em in terms of mid-limit games, you know, like just in terms of numbers of tables, is lower now than it was before the poker boom.
What I do find interesting, though, is it seems like a trend among pros to start playing limit again, or playing limit for the first time, or because I guess they find that it's more consistent and they can, you know, have a consistent earn rather than the vagaries of no limit.
Yeah. It's more predictable. I think it's easier to more accurately, more often, size up what your earn potential really is in limit, just as a general rule, which might be make it more attractive to some pros. But you can rely on the pros to kind of go where the water's warm. You know, they're going to, if there's money to be made there, they're going to show up.
Yeah. Maybe the water is getting, you know, maybe the water's starting to cool off and no limit. I don't know. The future, where are you headed? I mean, what you got on your plate?
Well, I'm back to coaching. I didn't take on any clients while I was working on the book. So my coaching calendar is full through May. I just put an announcement on my site that I'm not taking any new clients right now. I'm kind of leaving the summer open for my next creative endeavor. I haven't decided what it's going to be yet, what my next big project's going to be.
Well, there is something on the horizon.
Well, I didn't know if we were going to go into that or not.
There is something on the horizon, so stay tuned.
I got a question for you.
Okay, go ahead.
So your name, Cactus Jack,
yes,
right? Does that mean you're a good needler? Is that what that means? What is that?
Okay, well, I'll briefly tell the story. My grandfather was an engineer on the Missouri Pacific Railroad in Texas back in steam engines.
And is it 1830?
A little later than that. In the 30s and 40s of the 20th century.
Right.
And he actually started out as a fireman shoveling coal. And he always wore Western clothes. And my grandfather trained cutting horses. And the guys on the railroad would say, well, here comes old Cactus Jack. and the name stuck. And my grandfather actually has done gunfight shows and, you know, reenactments and all, and he's the marshal, and his star has Cactus Jack on it. So when I started playing online, I adopted the name Cactus Jack in honor of my grandfather. Now, here's the funny part. The last time I was home, my mother said, "Did you know your grandfather was a poker player back in the 50s, and your grandmother made him stop and go to church?"
Oh, that's funny.
Swear it's a true story. So perhaps somewhere down the line, poker is genetic. Maybe there's a scientist out there that wants to study it. It's kind of interesting anyway. So that's where Cactus Jack comes from. Cool. And then somebody said it was a wrestler, and I figure, okay, Real Poker is a copyrighted name, and Cactus Jack is a copyrighted name, and I don't even fucking exist. Okay, I'm totally out of bounds. Anyway, so we do have something coming up, and we'll be talking about it soon. And you guys get out there. If you haven't gotten his book, what are you doing? You don't like money? I mean, come on. This is costing you money, not having Tommy's book. And it's also costing you peace of mind, and it's also costing you posture. So I really appreciate you coming down, Tommy. And we're down here at Binion's. We'll be headed over to the Wednesday Poker Discussion Group. You guys come on out and say hi to us. And everything is copacetic, fine, wonderful, and grand. And, Tommy, I thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
And that's it. Next week, we've got Jeff Haney from the Las Vegas Sun, and I'll be trucking off to beautiful Foxwoods Casino in a couple of weeks. So you guys stick around. We'll be back next week on Real Poker with Cactus Jack on Hold'em Radio.com.